From the Lend Grand Hyatt University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of November 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear about the grain weevil. You may have seen this on social media. But today, we'll relate it also to the Safer Ag Workshop that took place earlier in this week on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Registration for the Farm Assets Conference closes on the 16th of this month. That's next Wednesday. And then the following Monday on the 21st, we'll meet at the I Hotel. I hope you'll be there. The cost is just $80. Join myself, the Farm Doc team, the crop scientist, and many others at the Farm Assets Conference. Kick off your winter meeting season in a great way. You can register now at willag.org or at farmassetsconference.com. It's part of the Farm Doc winter meeting season schedule.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn settled the day at $6.58, up 4¾. The March at $6.63, 3½ higher. And the May, $6.62¾, up 3¼. January beans, $14.50, up 27. The March at $14.53¾, up 25¾. Bean meal futures up $3.30. The bean oil, 88 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red, up 10¼, $8.13¾. Quarters the settlement price, the hard red at 943½, also up 18¼ for the day. Live cattle futures down $1.55, feeders off 312½, and lean hogs 52½ lower. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Todd. A big handshake and heartfelt thank you to all the veterans out there. We appreciate all you've done for us.
Thank you, and indeed we do. We appreciate all that they have done. I want to talk today about soybeans and the U.S. dollar. Just those two topics. What do you think about them?
Starting with soybeans, and we can weave the dollar into them, I think, Todd, because unlike the Chinese currency with the COVID restrictions being pulled back and new measures being put into place, and that really creating a risk on environment in the outside markets yesterday that translated into especially a soybean-led rally today, I think the currency in the Brazilian market actually has been actually weakening and helping them in their export front. And this is because of the new president, Lula. But that doesn't help us understand why the soybeans were able to get within about 4 cents of or 3 cents of taking out their monthly highs. And I think the USDA report was also a pretty bearish report when you think about it. We did not see a yield decline. We actually saw a yield increase. Carryover went up, and more importantly, global carryover increased to over 102 million metric tons. That's the second highest since 1992. So you've got several things here that would suggest the Brazilian market should be in kind of pole position with the United States soybeans especially. But what I noticed yesterday was the Paranagua bean price went from $565 a ton to $632 a ton today, and that took out the level that we are priced at around $620 a ton at the Gulf of Mexico. And there's only two things that I could see that's doing this. I think it could be the flooding in southern Brazil or talk and rumor mill that Brazil is going to move ahead with going from 10% biodiesel a blend rate up to 15% by March.
So that they would have a supply shortage, potentially, and two, domestic usage or consumption that is on the increase. And it all simply means that U.S. soybeans on the export market would be more valuable.
Exactly right. And I think more importantly for next week, it is very important that the fact that the Hong Kong equity market jumped 7% after the COVID announcement and the Chinese yuan strengthened substantially after the COVID announcement, that we see follow through in this in terms of President Xi and President Biden meeting next week, that we continue to see upward momentum. Because I think at the end of the day, with Safra Mercado coming out and saying just today that they see the soybean crop in Brazil at almost 155 million metric tons, I think at the end of the day, we're back because of the USDA report to the trade, I think, needing for the soybeans to go higher, they need the support of the wheat and the corn. And I think that's where the dollar especially comes in, and the fact that the Japanese yen made a six-week high this week at the end of the week, thanks to our CPI data. These things are starting to kind of maybe come together.
What do you mean by that? So the dollar is higher priced, but are you expecting that it's still the marker across the planet that allows end users to go ahead and make purchases and be satisfied with their price?
Yes, as long as we continue to see the river system improve, and we are seeing the St. Louis gauge go up pretty nicely in the last couple of weeks. We're seeing barge rates drop over $40 in some areas versus the prior week. But yeah, that, and also, Todd, the idea that if we have a peak in the inflation, then the Federal Reserve doesn't have to raise rates as aggressively. And the investors then turn to the emerging markets and say, they're cheap, let's buy them. And that tends to really help the risk on trade in commodities. And maybe those index buying of commodities starts back up again, like we've talked about in the past.
Does it last past the end of the calendar year?
I don't know, because, you know, the big thing that the shoe to drop now is we've got the railroad strike that's been pushed out to early December from my knowledge and what I've been able to gather. And then obviously we have the issue with the grain deal being extended in Ukraine. So I think that we've got several headwinds still out there that maybe put a cap in the market, but a weakening dollar and a top in the dollar does a lot of good, I think, and it would be a lot worse off for the price action if we had the dollar going up and some of these issues to have to deal with in terms of headwinds as well. The big issue right now from the big long-term perspective, Todd, for me is China has made a strategic shift in their economic growth model. Their export data showed that this week. They are only going to grow 2-3% if President Xi keeps his current model up. Otherwise, they're going to have to go back to a different model to get back up to 5%. Commodities are right there in the crosshairs between which one of those models China chooses.
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
My pleasure, sir. Thanks again, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Pre-Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. A big thank you to all of our veterans, service members, and military families on this Veterans Day. This week was unusually warm, with average temperatures ranging from the upper 40s to low 60s, between 6 and 12 degrees above normal for early November. The warmth continued a generally warmer than normal pattern that has dominated November so far, following what was the 47th coolest October on record statewide. In fact, November to date temperatures have been 8 to 12 degrees above normal. Everyone picked up at least some rain in the last week, however, totals were mainly less than 3/4 of an inch. The northwest part of the state was the big winner, with 7-day totals exceeding 3 inches in parts of Joe Davies and Stevenson counties. Meanwhile, southern Illinois chalked up another drier than normal week. You have to go back to August to find the last time some parts of far southern Illinois had a wetter than normal week. While most of the state has had a drier than normal fall season so far, precipitation deficits in parts of southern Illinois are particularly sobering, exceeding 6 inches just going back to mid-August. Consequently, severe to extreme drought persisted this week in the U.S. Drought Monitor in southern Illinois, while some moderate drought was removed in northwest Illinois. Despite the unseasonable warmth in November, evaporation and demand for water this time of the year are low, so we can make headway on drought recovery if the southern part of the state can get a wet week. Unfortunately, it looks like we'll have to wait at least another week to get significant precipitation. Looking ahead, a large low pressure system is forecasted to dip to the south of Illinois, bringing heavy rain to southeast and possibly heavy snow to the mid-Atlantic. 7-day forecasted totals are less than 1/4 of an inch across the state, and much of that is likely to fall as light snow this weekend and early next week. The main reason we'll see our minuscule precipitation as snow is because of a cold front that pushed through last night, bringing in increasingly cold air. High temperatures this weekend and into next week are forecast in the upper 30s to mid-40s, while nighttime low temperatures will regularly dip in the mid to low 20s, and some parts of the state will see lows in the teens this weekend. It will be quite a shot to the system given how warm November has been so far. Make sure to take precaution if you're going to be working outside this weekend. That first real cold of the season has an especially hard bite. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.
Up next, we'll talk about the grain weevil as it relates to the Safer Ag workshop that took place earlier in this week on the campus of the University of Illinois. But first, I'd like to remind you that coming up, not next Monday, but the following one, the Farm Assets Conference will take place here on campus at the iHotel. Join the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economist from the U of Vime, along with the crop scientist and a couple special guests, including some of the brokers that you hear on willag.org for the full-day event. The cost is just $80. Registration closes next Wednesday. Don't wait. Get yourself registered today at farmassetsconference.com. Well, if you've been on social media this year and you're involved in agriculture, I'll bet that you've seen a video with a little device inside a bin called a grain weevil that is just there to, I believe, break up the rough spots in the bin, that which is a very dangerous job for producers. And as it happens, the co-founder of Grain Weevil is here. He's also the CEO, Chad Johnson. Thank you, Chad, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, I want to talk about two things. You're here for the Safer Ag workshop. We'll get to that in just a bit. But I also want to talk about the grain weevil. How did you come up with the idea of developing something that's small, remote, and that can be simply dropped into a bin to break up those parts of the grain that have gotten moldy and stuck together and really become a danger to the producer and others who might climb inside?
Well, a few years ago, my son had built a completely random different robot that a local farmer had seen and said, man, if you could build that robot, build me one to keep me out of a grain bin. And so that was the start of it. We're not farmers. My son and I had never been inside of a grain bin before. And this family friend just challenged us to build a robot. My son was he'd grown up in competitive robotics, so small, mobile robotics was his expertise. Tinkered around for a while, and we finally got it to drive on the grain, which the hazards were our first task, right? The idea was to break up those crusts and bridges and clumps, but now we can level grain bins. We can actually act as a spreader as you're filling up the grain bins. We can push grain into the auger systems, so we can manage a grain bin from start to finish with our robot. So it's turned into be much more than just breaking up the crusts and clumps.
Well, it sounds much more sophisticated than I thought it was, because I was thinking you just dropped it in and it sort of willy-nilly went wherever it wanted to, but apparently that's not the case.
It is not the case. It can do all sorts of different things. It can map and measure, give you 3D volumes of your grain bin. The autonomous features that we're building right now, that's the stage that we're at, they're specific patterns that work better than others. And so it's not just kind of like the Roomba that bounces around your room. It has specific tasks that it can accomplish based on what patterns that it runs. So it is much more complicated than most people think, but it's extremely powerful. So it can chew through all of those crusts and clumps and break those up like they're not even there. But you can also move it from grain bin to grain bin as well, so you can maximize that throughout. Each robot can do about 250,000 bushels, give or take the diameter of the grain bin. So,
how big is it?
It's about 20 inches by 20 inches and weighs 40 pounds.
And if I remember correctly, it operates on 4 auger wheels or something like that.
Yeah, it's actually just 2, so it's more like a tank drive. So there's 2 independent auger setups. And that allows us to both maneuver the robot and manipulate the grain at the same time.
So in a 30-foot grain bin, or whatever size you think works for you, how long does it take to level a bin?
So our main testing farm, the farmer that asked us to build the bins, has 48-foot grain bins. And we can level a 15-16% moisture grain in just over 9 hours. We're doing a 22% moisture grain bin right now, and we're 12 hours in, and we probably think we have about 4 hours left to go. The extra moisture just takes a little bit longer because you don't get that nice gravity flow when it's a little wetter. So that's what we're working through right now is, that's not fun to sit there and drive the robot for that long, but as soon as we are able to activate all the autonomous, just tell it to level the bin and come back the next day and it'll be done.
Is it corded, not corded, how powered?
It has a battery, so we actually have a very powerful battery system that we drop it down into the grain bin with a winching system and it lets go, so it's not tethered for most of the operations. If we're in a really bad crust or a bad situation that's already occurred, then we can tether it. But staying tethered limits about 60% of our operations. So we drop it and let it go. It's a fully mobile machine. In normal situations, we can run between 2 and 3 hours, depending on slopes and those. In the wet corn, we run just a little over an hour. Right now, we charge it manually. Very soon, it'll be fully autonomous charging as well. So it'll come back, dock, charge, go back in. And our battery packs allow us to charge in about 20 minutes.
And what is the cost of the machine?
We don't know yet. Part of the reason why I'm here today is because there's so much of the safety and the liability insurance and all of those things that, you know, when you're introducing a new product that doesn't really fit the mold of tractors or autonomous robots in the fields, we're navigating all of that stuff right now. And so the safety certifications and liability aspect of it is unknown. It's an expensive avenue to go down to make sure the robot's safe. Our target goal is to have the robot right around $10,000 to start with. And once we start to get scale, then that'll drop. Just so the batteries and those things.
So you're really working here because you wanted the context and the context as much as anything at the Safer Ag Workshop so that you could figure out how to, one, possibly price, ensure liability, and make sure that this thing meets safety standards.
Yeah, so we've known all along that if you're building a safety robot, the robot has to be safer than the alternatives. And grain bins are hazardous locations, so they can explode, the dust explosions, all of those things. So there are regulations that guide us, and then there's also, you know, design standards to make sure that our software has backups and can detect things and be safe. So everything, like, it won't work outside of its confined grain bin. So I can't be carrying it and it'll turn on. So we have to build all that stuff in. And this workshop allows me to connect to the people that are writing those standards, that are developing those things, other companies that are already implementing them. So we can learn how to navigate as quickly as we can through this. It's a very important process. You know, you don't want to take shortcuts, but you just don't want to go down the wrong path for 2 months and then realize, oh, I should have been doing something else.
Chad Johnson is the co-founder and CEO of Grain Weevil. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Let's check the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Good Friday to you.
Yeah, it is. It's a good Friday, but it's really cold. So I wish for the warmth back.
Yeah, I'd like to have the warmth back too, but it looks like it's just going to trend colder for a while.
I could use one more day. I'm going to the Illinois-Purdue game tomorrow. I wish it wasn't going to be like 35 and northwest winds at 30. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, this cold air that's come in place, and some places today on Friday have seen already a 50 degree swing in temperatures compared to yesterday. And the cold air is probably going to be locked in place for a couple of weeks, maybe all the way out to Thanksgiving, with very brief interludes of mild conditions. We're going to see a lot of cold air. So my concern is, you know, up to this point, maybe some of the issue with getting some fall application done was it was too dry, and now we're going to go over to our soil temperatures dropping off quickly with a lot of nights of well below freezing temperatures, and that's going to change the soil temperatures quite a bit. The other part of this is that some of the recent precipitation, for example, the big blizzard that started in California and ended up in Montana, North Dakota, that's still actually going over the Great Lakes today, and then the moisture from Nicole, which is staying up the East Coast, all of that's missing us. So we're a little bit drier too, and it's easier to get colder when you're drier, and we're certainly seeing the impacts of that going forward. So I'm looking for the next pattern change to come after Thanksgiving, and at that point, I think the Pacific Jet's going to really crank up again and start delivering more routine systems going into winter. But until then, we're on this cold, dry stretch here across the midsection of the country and squarely right here in Illinois.
What does it mean for farmers? And are we locked into a winter pattern?
We're not locked into a winter pattern. That's a good question. What it probably means for farmers is that if you do have some harvest that still needs to get done, at least we won't be dealing with overly wet conditions. So you'll be able to do that. But like we said, the problem might be with application this fall, given that the soil temperatures are going to drop off pretty quickly with this new colder air. I think the other thing that farmers are going to think about is, what does all this mean for winter? Are we going to continue to see cold shots like this, which could drive, you know, just total heating or energy demand? And what might that mean for, you know, some of the more important commodities that feed into agriculture, like just energy prices or diesel and things like that? And I get it. That should be front of mind right now.
Well, by the way, speaking of Nicole, the friend of mine that I go visit that retired and has a small yacht, a sailboat at Fort Pierce, says he checked off his bucket list riding out a storm, a hurricane through the eye of the storm, because that's where it came
from. Oh, my gosh. That's not on my bucket list. I study this stuff, and I'm going to tell you something. That will never be on my bucket list, to be in the eye of a hurricane, because to get there, you have to go through the eye wall. So no thanks.
Yeah. Well, he made it. So that's good. South America, what do we know there?
Well, the same thing that's going to be testing North America's winter forecast, which is the fading La Nina. I'm still predicting a fading La Nina after the start of the new year. What does it do to South America? So we know planting pace has been very fast in the north. The crop will be big in like Mato Grosso to Goiás, Minas Gerais, even Mato Grosso do Sul, which means we should expect a large soybean crop. It won't be as big as it could have been because of some regional drought issues in southern Brazil. But the question we have is if La Nina lets go in January, when they're trying to harvest this first crop of soybeans, how will it affect harvest? And then what about the Safrinha corn crop? So there is risk that if you lose your La Nina, that the northern growing areas have drier second seasons. So January, February, March, and April. So that is still on the table. I can't take that off the table until I see how the La Nina fades. The other part of this is Argentina. The rains that were supposed to come through yesterday and then today and tomorrow are now substantially less than what we'd predicted. So I had been seeing rains not busting the drought, but helping. And they have good soil down there. So any rain gets used. And all of a sudden you look at it and like, wait a minute, the rain didn't get to Buenos Aires like we thought. It didn't get to Cordoba like we thought. It missed Santa Fe. It was all very far south in Argentina or very far north. So the net effect was the longstanding drought there just got pushed down the road even farther. And farther down the road is drier risks in Argentina. So Argentina is the wild card. The damage is already done to the winter wheat crop. But remember, Argentina, unlike Illinois, has like a, I don't know, a 3-month planting window. I mean, they've got so much time to get the crop in. So they may just be waiting until they have better conditions to plant. But that pushes the whole calendar around. So that's going to be my wild card going forward.
Hey, thank you so much. By the way, I didn't really get past the whole February, March timeframe because I was thinking, oh, crop insurance, that might just be the ticket.
Yeah.
You have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
That is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. And there you can buy your tickets today for the Farm Assets Conference. It's a week from this coming Monday, the 21st day of November, at the I Hotel in Urbana-Champaign. The cost is just $80 to join the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economist, the crop scientist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, along with a couple special guests and some of the Will Ag brokers for our day-long event, the Farm Assets Conference at farmassetsconference.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.